Ladies and gentlemen, friends and open-minded people, wherever you live, across the United States of America, Europe, and the world. This is David Duke, and this is Human Rights Radio. And that's the framework, that's the belief system in which I work. And it's a system that I think are good for my people, and I think human rights entail the right of all people to be free, to be independent, to not live under some sort of globalist tyranny, to have both individual rights of freedom of speech and thought and press and faith, but also have the values that are consistent with the diversity of mankind. We do have different races and peoples and ethnic groups, different religions, different values, and people have the right, should have the right, to practice their own traditions and to support their own heritage. Even the very existence of their people. And our existence is certainly shaped in great part, obviously, by our inheritance, by our genes, as well as our traditions, our history, our traditional values, the faith that we practice, many other aspects as well. And every people should have the right to have a society that's dedicated to the vast majority of the people of that society. And also preserve their very essence and their very expression of life. There's a reason why genocide is called the greatest crime, because genocide is defined by the Genocide Convention worldwide. A good definition of it, by the way, is that genocide is the intentional destruction, in whole or in part, of an ethnic group, a race, a culture, a nationality, a faith, just simply the effort to destroy in whole or in part a people. Because the truth is, to preserve what maintains your own identity, your own self, and to actually preserve your own life form upon the earth, you should have the right to affect like immigration into your country. You should have the right, obviously, to resist other peoples that might come in and try to take you over or steal your land or enslave your children. These are fundamental issues. And we got to realize that I think that these human rights are God-given rights. And even nature expresses these rights every second. In the fact that every living life form, every identity, whether it be in the animal kingdom or among human beings, there's a natural inclination, a natural drive to reproduce and preserve the impact of your genome or the people that are similar to you in your genetic background. Now, that's not hatred. It can be if you're trying to destroy other peoples, if you're trying to genocide other peoples or destroy their rights. That certainly is something that we have come to understand in the Western world, that that's something that's not good. We've also kind of evolved in our understanding of human rights. At one time, slavery was certainly a very common thing of all peoples. But the Western world rose up, including the British Empire, which was all around the world, girdled the world, so to speak. They realized that slavery was not something good. In fact, the British government, and these were the British people that were running the government then, it wasn't really controlled in those days by the Jewish element. And the Jewish element is that one race, the most racist race, the most supremacist race the world's ever seen. And the British people realized that not only were they not going to allow slavery in their country, or with even in the British Empire, but they were also going to help stop it on a global way, because they were kind of like a global nation in a sense, the British Empire. You know, the old saying was that the sun never set on the British Empire. So they spent a lot of money and a lot of risk to their sailors, a lot of risk to their time and their effort, so the British Navy would stop clearly identified slave ships on the high seas, wherever they were in the world, And they would go to the trouble and the time and the risk and the money and all those things to restore those people slaved. And a lot of this time period was in the time of the triangular slave trade, which, by the way, another fact of history, and this program we're going to go into, as we always do, the rest of the story you don't get from modern media. We're going to play an interview. I'm going to play an interview with you, or parts of it, with Tucker Carlson and the great Massey, Congressman Massey, who has really been almost a lone voice against the Jewish tyrants that are bribing, controlling, extorting, threatening, blackmailing every member of Congress and every member of government and every important person. In fact, even though I have a lot of hesitation, there's a lot of things Trump's doing which I think is absolutely horrific. The idea that we're going to pass a law, and if we have some scientists that's working on ways to combat a disease or different aspects of any sort of scientific work, if they go and they are opposed to the genocide going on in Gaza, or for that matter, if they're opposed to this insane genocidal war, and it is a genocidal war, I believe that, that's the rest of the story, in Ukraine. It's a genocidal war against Ukraine and Russia. It's a war that was created by these Jewish supremacists, and this is explained. And again, when I say these things, they may be shocking to some of you, but I'm saying things that are said by some of the most famous Jews in the world, like Jeffrey Sachs, like Norman Finkelstein. Jeffrey Sachs did a whole article how the Iraq War, a war, by the way, which cost 7,000 at least American lives and hundreds of thousands, I think, wounded, of health considerations, health damage. And so many, you know, we had the highest suicide rate in the history of the American military after these insane wars. And we killed a lot of innocent people. We, even in the sanctions against Iraq, we had Madeleine Albright, that vile, disgusting, murderous Jewish troll who is head of our Secretary of State. And she's on an international, national interview program. And the commentator asks her, says, we understand that 500,000 children have been killed because of these sanctions against this desert kingdom called Iraq. And these sanctions have been horrific. This is a desert kingdom. They have to import their food. They have to import their, obviously, the drugs they use to combat disease, the anesthetics they use, everything that they use in that. And our sanctions are blocking that from this country. And they said this way, that we believe, and reputable sources, independent sources, have showed that maybe 500,000 children have died, and they went into the hospitals. And they showed these heart-wrenching videos and so forth of little babies drowning in their own phlegm, their own bile, their own diseased bodies because they couldn't get simple, cheap antibiotics because our policy kept them from coming into that country. And 500,000 children were killed. And this was not something that was broadcast to the world. They didn't say to America, oh, we're killing 500,000 children. But Leslie Stahl asks Albright, and we've got to go, and you know, I repeat this a lot. So please bear with me, folks, and I want you to learn this. I want you to take this interview. You can find it on the internet. Play it for anybody that won't listen, who doesn't understand that the people who are running America are evil people, killing innocent babies and children, as well as a lot of old people that died, in mass, indiscriminately. In fact, that's what these policies fall worst upon, is the children with weakened immune systems. It's a horrible thing. And knowingly doing so, it's got to be one of the most immoral, one of the most horrendous, one of the most monstrous crimes that somebody could commit, innocent children. As a Christian, I always think back of the words of Jesus Christ in the New Testament that we're supposed to follow. That's supposed to be our king, so to speak. And Jesus Christ said it so clearly. He said, the children, he said, all children. And by the way, the New Testament was not about Jewish supremacy. It was about loving God, and it was loving thy neighbor as themselves. And Jesus actually, in the parable of the Good Samaritan, and many other parables too, there's many of them, it's many times said, no Greek, no Roman, no Jew, we're all human beings, and we should treat everybody fairly. That doesn't mean you can't defend yourself if you're people trying to enslave you or hurt your children. In fact, when he said that if a person tried to hurt an innocent child, any innocent child of any heritage, Jesus Christ said a millstone should be tied around their neck and dropped to the bottom of the sea. And he illustrated this by talking about what Judeans, and the Judaic religion at that time, which had gone really already to the dark side, and Christ exposed a lot of their crimes, the scribblers of these Pharisees and the lies that they were scribbling, the death and destruction that they were exhibiting. Because Jews themselves showed themselves to go against the word of God, and that's what whatever covenant there was a conditional covenant. It says that very clearly in Deuteronomy when you talk about it. And the way Christianity always was, the Jews broke that covenant. And the chosen people became those who followed Christ and those who followed the laws of a loving God and the spirituality and the values of Jesus Christ. And what did Jesus Christ say? He talked about the Good Samaritan. Now, Jews hated Samaritans. You couldn't drink after them. You couldn't go into a Samaritan house. You're liable to be stoned. It was a hardcore belief system. So Jesus uses the example of a Samaritan coming down a road and then a Jewish priest. And Christ speaks out against these Jewish priests and Jewish Sadducees and Jewish Pharisees repeatedly in the New Testament. You can quote Jesus Christ in the New Testament really easily, saying the kingdom of God is taken away from you and giving to nations producing the fruits of it. He literally says in the New Testament that the real chosen of God is actually the Gentiles, because the Gentiles are the ones accepting the doctrine and the divinity of Jesus Christ. And the Jews not only did not accept him, they hated him. They called upon his blood, and they cursed and persecuted and murdered Christians who supported the faith. It's just interesting, folks. These are things that Christians have to understand, and a lot of people are tired of hearing maybe this stuff too, but you've got to hear it. And the idea of Christian Zionism is the most, to me, one of the most evil things in the world. Anyway, Christ said that you hurt a child, innocent child, you need to have a millstone. A millstone should be tied around their neck and dropped to the bottom of the sea. Actually, he wasn't being too cruel to them, because what he was suggesting was that's a quick death. But most people in a community, and I think it's the same way now, if some man or anyone was caught molesting, sodomizing, raping, torturing, or murdering a child, anyone who is caught doing that would be considered the most evil of people. And the communities, whether Jewish or any other community, that encountered their own children being raped or murdered en masse, they would absolutely punish that person with a very terrible death. And stoning was not a good death, by the way. It was a long, torturous, and horrific death. Getting a millstone around your neck was a quick death. But even Jesus Christ said anybody who would make a child so much as stumble, just so much as stumble, they should have a millstone tied around their neck, because that's how much he was concerned about children. And the Good Samaritan basically told us that all children were the children of God, and that children naturally were the kingdom of God. So the Good Samaritan story was so clear and so fantastic in the fact that these were the ones the Jews hated more than anybody else. They hated the Samaritans, even though they basically had a lot of Jewish blood, and some of them followed what was called even the Torah at the time. And Jesus said, when the Pharisees, which opposed Christ's testimony, his teaching, his ministry, his life, and everything that he stood for, and his conception of God as a God of love and a God that wants people to treat each other fairly and decently and not be a supremacist. Christ, the New Testament is about the fact that Gentiles aren't evil, whether they're Greeks or Romans or whatever they are. They're people, and people should be treated fairly. If someone does wrong, of course, they should face punishment or whatever it would be due for someone that's stealing or killing. And that was the difference, because you see, in the Old Testament, thou shalt not kill. That's great. Thank God most Old Testament scholars today and most Christians today believe that that was really about not killing anyone unjustly. You understand that, right? That's what most scholars believe. But we know at that time of Christ that that's not the way the Jewish elite envisioned it. In fact, the story of the Good Samaritan is all about that. So Jewish priests, which were like the epitome of the enemies of Christ, they see a fellow Jew who was robbed and stripped of his clothes, his stuff was stolen from him, was beaten terribly and hurt. And the Jewish priest walked on the other side of the street, didn't help him, even his fellow Jew. And then a Levite, which is like the Jewish elite, he comes by, and he's walking on the other side of the street. But a Samaritan comes along, those terrible people that Jews were taught to hate, as enemies of the Jewish people, he came by, and guess what? He said, here's a man who is hurt and has been damaged, and it's just a terrible thing, and I'm going to help him. Yes, I know that, you know, the Judeans hate Samaritans. I know there are enemies, but something in my heart tells me that I've got to help a man who is unjustly attacked, robbed, and hurt. And he helps the man. And Jesus literally talks about the parable, and he explains the parable, as well as so many other scholars. In fact, even the writers of the New Testament, the people that gave us the Gospels, they explain it real clearly. That the Good Samaritan story is basically a defining who the idea of thou shalt not kill thy neighbor, hurt thy neighbor, harm thy neighbor, that the neighbor, your neighbor is defined, as it says in Leviticus, it's your neighbor is not defined the way the Jewish religion defined it, in terms of the leadership of the Jewish religion defined it, as only Jews, but was everybody. In fact, even the New Testament has a very interesting section about Jewish lawyers. This Jewish lawyer thought he had Christ in a trap when Christ was saying this. And in fact, it's described as Jewish lawyer, by the way. And Jewish lawyers, because they were Jewish lawyers that argued, you know, the Jewish scriptures, and they argued the condition. And you can look this up in any biblical scholarship that you want, you'll find it's true. The way that they interpreted love thy neighbor was love thy fellow Jew. And what they taught, there were some passages which might indicate being fair to strangers and so forth, but the overwhelming theme was, oh, you can enslave people who are not Jewish, you could kill people who are not Jewish, you could murder them, you could steal their land, you could do whatever you wanted. Usury, practice usury on them, which is condemned roundly in the Old Testament and the New Testament. But you can't do that to fellow Jews, even though Judaism had become so corrupt that they were doing this against many fellow Jews. And that goes to the story of Jesus taking the cat of nine tails into the temple right before the Jews crucified him. And this was one of the reasons why they crucified him, because he realized that the Jewish scribes, and he talks about the lies of the Jewish scribes. Titus in the New Testament talks about Jewish fables. You don't listen to Jewish fables. So Christ basically says, you want to know who your neighbor is? It's the real neighbor is the Samaritan. In fact, he's a lot more your neighbor than that fellow Jewish scribe who didn't help their brother or help any human being, much less some Samaritan. You can't even imagine a Jewish scribe stopping by the side of the road to help a Samaritan that was robbed. So these are very, very fascinating subjects. But this goes to the elemental issues that we're talking about here every day, because what we see in Israel is exactly what Jesus was talking about in those passages. That's my opinion. And the political state of Israel does not have a covenant. In fact, 80% of Jews in Israel don't even believe in God, much less, you know, the other people, the Muslims believe in God. It's a different conception, but it's a different God. And other people are there. Christians obviously don't follow Jewish doctrine. But we had Netanyahu talking about mass murder and evoking that as it's fine to kill Palestinian children. But these Jews who are doing it, they actually are anti-Christian. Israel has anti-Christian laws. So I'm going to talk today and share with you some of the Tucker Carlson interview with Massey and try to give you some of the rest of the story and elucidate this. And it's going to begin. Let me see if I can pull it up for you as best I can. This boomer, who sometimes isn't as tech savvy as he would like to be. But let me get it up here. Let's see. So, okay. So let me get to the beginning of this, if I can use my big stubbly fingers to get to the right spot to start this. I had this earlier, but I've got to get it back here. 3:15. Let me see if I can get this up. It's hard. It's hard to do this by phone, but that's how I got to play this so you can hear this now. Okay, 12, 10. I got to get down to about 6:45, something like that. And I'm going to get there in a moment, folks. Thank you very much for your patience for this old man with the few cancers that I'm trying to fight effectively. And I thank your good wishes and your support, by the way, in this fight that I'm making right now. Anyway, here we go. Yeah, this is 5:30. That's too early. Okay, here we go. Let's play this.
John Sopko, about twice a year, about the money that was being wasted in Afghanistan. It was about $50 billion a year. And I was glad to see us get out of Afghanistan, but kind of like feathering the clutch and shifting gears, we just went from second gear to third gear, because as soon as we quit spending $50 billion a year in Afghanistan, we started spending more than $50 billion a year in Ukraine. There's a military industrial complex. They call it the defense industrial base now in the United States. They say they're hungry and we got to keep them fed. And since we don't have any of our own wars and we don't have a reason to deplete our stocks and our bombs and weapons that we have, we'll engage in these other things to keep them healthy and thriving. In fact, the Biden administration even made that argument in a letter to Congress for why we should do this supplemental foreign aid to Israel, to Ukraine, to Taiwan. They made the argument that the defense industrial base needs to be strong, and so we need to spend this money. And they gave a list of all the states in the United States that would benefit from this spending, and that's why they said we should do it. But if you're...
And by the way, this began, I didn't get to the right, exactly the right spot, but it began by Tucker saying, well, why are we having this war with Russia? And the answer was basically that these powerful people want a war with Russia, and he was basically saying, which is somewhat inaccurate, but it's true as well. People talk often about the military industrial complex. Well, I'm going to tell you the rest of the story today. It's really not a military industrial complex. The military are the servants of the Jewish media, financial, and government infiltration complex. That's the reality of it. It's true that military organizations and military or weapons manufacturers get a windfall of all this. Caterpillar makes all these bulldozers. Israel gets to bulldoze all the Palestinian homes and churches and synagogues in the West Bank and in Gaza and the rest of it, and the tanks and the planes and the bombs. It's committing this massive genocide. But is that really who are the biggest contributors in government are? And we're going to talk and listen to a lot of talk here in this broadcast about AIPAC. And AIPAC, ladies and gentlemen, is like the tip of the iceberg. As you know, like the Titanic, that tip of that iceberg is very, very small amount above the water that you see. It's the iceberg underneath the water that has the real power. And even if you look, and this is important to understand, you hear AIPAC talked about a lot and their great power, and they are the most influential lobby in Washington, D.C. And it's not because they directly put money out from AIPAC to all the candidates. Massey's going to talk in here about how that they basically make every congressman endorse their principles, and that they know, you know, even they were trying to make him sign a paper about how he's going to support Israel no matter what, and even write an article about that so they can just cement him in to support Israel no matter what Israel does. And as a little caveat, the rest of the story is, as always, Israel's committed terrible terrorism against the United States of America. Iran never did anything to us on the level that Israel has done in attacking the USS Liberty. That Israel has done on the Mossad attack. It wasn't successful because one of their bombs went early, but it was a Mossad operation against American expats who were retiring in Egypt. And they had a large community in Egypt. They had movie theaters. They had PXs. Many of them were former veterans. They had libraries, schools, or whatever for these Americans over there. So the Israeli Mossad decided to make a terrorist attack and kill a lot of Americans to get America to go to war against Egypt. This is the middle of the 1950s, to get us involved against Nasser in Egypt. But the Jewish plot went awry, because everything the Jews kind of planned, they don't control everything, and they made some mistakes, and one of their inflammatory bombs went off on one of the Jews. They captured him, and they rounded up all these Jewish Mossad agents who confessed. And later they got medals in Israel, so Israel admitted that this was a Jewish plot to commit terror and murder against Americans, to lie us into a war which would have killed untold numbers of Americans. Wow. Untold numbers of Americans. Maybe thousands, tens of thousands, could be millions in a massive war. Jeffrey Sachs, as I've talked about so many times, has documentation. He talks about all the time how that Netanyahu and the entire Jewish government testified before Congress. Oh, yeah, that we take out Saddam Hussein, we're going to have a peaceful society, we're going to have a great country, and that's the real problem. I guarantee you everything is going to be great if we do that. Didn't work out that way. Thousands of Americans died in that war. Tens of thousands were wounded. Hundreds of thousands, I think, actually suffered health situation because of that. As I said earlier, we had massive numbers of suicides, higher than after any wars, because of the conditions and so forth of that war and the circumstances of that insane war. It was a Jewish war. It was a war by Israel. So we were talking about the military-industrial complex, which was, you know, mentioned by Massey, where he's trying to discuss this with Tucker. And it makes me think about one of the most classic examples of the fact it's not the military-industrial complex that is bribing, threatening, because not only will they not give you money that you need in a massive level, but they will also absolutely be able to fund the enemies you have politically. And they admit and they brag about their role in doing all those things. And it's not just AIPAC. I have an amazing chart, and which is created by the facts and figures of an organization called Open Secrets. It's a very famous governmental watchdog organization that just talks about the funding of candidates and who are the biggest contributors. Because ever since the 1990s, we had the Supreme Court decision which ruled, and this is showing you who's running the Supreme Court, the same Supreme Court that ruled you can't put a manger scene up at Christmas time, but you can put up giant menorahs that celebrate a massacre of Greeks and Syrians and fellow Jews that may intermarry. It was a massacre to stop assimilation, even though, of course, assimilation for every other people in the world is presented from the Jewish media as a good thing. And why is that? Because they want to overthrow not just the Palestinian, and they did, vast majority. 1905, Jews were between 5 and 10%, probably closer to 5% of the people there, and maybe only 2 or 3% of the people, of the land that was owned. It was Palestinians there. This was not a land without a people. It was a popular, peopled land, and the people who lived there, even if you read the Pentateuch, they were there many thousands of years, actually, before the conquering of Canaan. I mean, that's in the Jewish Bible itself. So, you know, we've got to understand who this power is. So who is this power? Is it the military-industrial complex? Well, we can look, and I'm going to give you a rundown real quickly of the. But this is beyond the scenes, and these are things you need to know. So this is about the person they really wanted to make president. They didn't succeed the first time around against Trump. Was Hillary Clinton, and here's the list of the 20 biggest billionaire, and that's, we're talking about a billionaire oligarchy. And by the way, when you see this, you're going to realize it's not an oligarchy. It is an oligarchy of wealthy billionaires, but it's an oligarchy that can be defined very clearly as an ethnocracy. Ethnocracy, meaning ruled by a specific ethnic group and a very conscious, nationalistic, Jewish first group. It's not, these people are not dual citizens. These people are not people that are dedicated to both Israel and America. They're dedicated to Israel. So here's a list of the names and some of their powers. Starting on this particular list, this is again from, you know, from the election of Hillary Clinton. Or they attempted election of her. And these were the 20 biggest contributors. Millions upon millions of dollars. Anybody who contributed anything over $500,000 or $100,000 to the president usually gets an invite to the White House. Maybe even if you give $1 million, you can spend a night in the White House. Now that's influence. And who are they? Are they weapons manufacturers? Oh, I think they've got some power, no question about it. They support a lot of think tanks, but those think tanks are overwhelmingly Jewish think tanks, excuse me. A little bit of a dry mouth here. And so let's just start down the line. 10 million first is Chaim and Sheryl Sabin, a man who says his main purpose and the reason why he's in politics is to support Israel and support the Jewish people, Jewish interests. Jewish. James Simmons, big finance. This is a financier. Both these guys are financiers and media moguls and so forth as well. Jewish. Very dedicated Jews and dedicated Zionists. George Soros, third. 7 million again. Mary Pritzker, the Pritzker family, related, I think, to the people that took over Illinois. I just saw him in the news. They're talking about how he's the future. He's a fat Jewish guy who absolutely is nothing more than the a Jewish supremacist in every way. So you're going down the list. So that's the first five. Then you have you got a Gentile there, Laurie Woods. Then next one's up, Daniel Abraham, Jewish. Jewish Zionist. Herbert Sandler, another financier, Jewish Zionist. Davis Shaw, Jewish Zionist. These are the biggest contributors. These are the people that presidents listen to. R. Henry and Marcia Laufer. The Laufers are connected with a lot of powerful Jewish organizations. Jewish. Fred Eichner, I had to really dig into his background, and I found out, yes, and he indeed is Jewish. Pat Stryker, Jewish. All right. John Stryker, Jewish. Combine those two together, they're way up on the list of third or fourth, right? The family members. And oh, I got another Gentile, second Gentile, Barbara Lee. Barbara Lee. And that's it for the top 20. Two Gentiles. And most of them are far down the list. Thomas Tull, the same guy who financed the Black KKK movie, which is a big lie. There was never any Klan violence. My organization never committed any violence. I never had a single member of our organization commit violence. I've moved way beyond the Klan for many, many years, and I reject any sort of racism and any sort of harm, and I always did. I condemned racism. If anything, I was a voice for nonviolence, and I told our people it's fine to want to make sure that you had true equal rights. The best qualified person got the job or the promotion, whatever they're entitled to by their merit. Same thing is true for blacks. The best person qualified, black, white, Asian, whatever, should get that. Jews control the universities, and now they're even trying to control the universities more by threatening to withhold public money, taxpayers' money, from any university that allows freedom of speech on their campus, or any professor or student to dare to get up and criticize this genocide going on in Israel. We know what anti-Semitism is today. Anti-Semitism is defined themselves by people who oppose the genocide and the murder and the wars that the Jewish international bankers and globalists have doused this world in. And it's really 120 years. This goes deep, folks. Thomas Tull was one of the financiers of the Black Klansman movie, which is it's an alleged plot based on a book by Ron Stallworth, a policeman in the Colorado Springs Police Department, about an alleged Klan plot. But it wasn't. There was nothing in the book about any alleged Klan plot to kill any black woman civil rights warrior. It was just nothing more than a vicious attack on me because I was one of the best known speakers against Zionism in the world. I opposed the Iraq war, by the way. One of the biggest voices on that. The United States government even launched, an attack on me for taxes to silence me, to try to silence me. They actually reached out for me going on these networks and threatened these networks with taking away their press credentials if they interviewed me. Even though I'd been on Meet the Press three times before, the most powerful talk show in the world, but they're not going to allow anybody because they were cracking down by then. So you read all these things, Schwartz, Mosey, Katzenberg, Steinberg. We're talking about Jewish financiers, which have massive billions of dollars at their disposal. And AIPAC, this is never brought up, but this is something I will bring up so you put into your memory hat. I guess you can call it the memory hole if you follow the great writings of George Orwell in 1984. Get these out of your memory hole and get this into your memory that AIPAC's power is not by the individual money. You think you can dish out some pretty, powerful, they do some press releases and dish out some powerful donations, but they've got a list of these Jewish billionaires, which they compile and they keep religiously, I guess I should say. They got this list of all these powerful Jews. So if they want to destroy any other candidate's campaign and outspend them and all that, also, they can invoke the Jewish power in the media. And that's another thing that we can talk about. We know the media was very biased against Donald Trump in that election, even in the last one. I mean, when we had the Biden election, look at the Biden laptop. Everybody knew it was real. Every FBI agent knew it was real. And the media knew it was real, but they shut down sites that dared to say the Biden laptop was real. The Biden son was on the take. And Biden, this was major corruption. And by the way, the company they were getting the money from in Ukraine was a Jewish-run company. One of the key people in there was Kamakowski. And he's considered a criminal by even the United States State Department today. Yeah, that's who was. He and the head of Burisma Oil Company were the ones that was giving Biden these big bribes. So 18 of 20, that's 90% of the biggest single contributors to Clinton. You think it's any different later when Biden ran? Well, no. Biden, 8 of the 9 biggest contributors were Jews. When Kamala Harris ran, 11 out of 12 of the biggest contributors to Kamala Harris were Jews. As well as the mainstream media was very much biased against Trump, even though Trump was so pronouncing his loyalty to Israel. And some Jews thought Trump might be more advantageous than even the Democrats. And so far, Trump has been fulfilling that for them. They don't like his program about immigration. They've always been in favor of immigration because they wanted to change the dynamics of America. The reason why the Palestinians and these wars have been taking place all over the world, causing the death of millions and a lot of Americans and trillions of dollars of money, like the Iraq War, which the University, Brown University, had a great think tank on the cost of the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War. And you know what the numbers are, folks? You're not going to believe it. It's hard to even comprehend it. These wars cost us $8 trillion, which we're still paying for, including the interest. $8 trillion. $8 trillion. Yeah, some weapons manufacturers got some money out of it, but that's not who gave us the war. What gave us the war was Jewish supremacy, was Jewish supremacism, was people dedicated to Israel and dedicated to what they saw as the Jewish agenda. And the way they were able to create this Jewish agenda, take over America, they were the forces changing the immigration laws of America, and America also under their control. It's called a golem in terms of Jewish psychology and Jewish history. A golem. They were the ones that wanted to change the demographics of America and have a very significant minority that they could divide and conquer and use that as a lever to control elections. The reason why Israel was supported was because of the fact that Jews had changed this dynamic. They took over. They already took over the American media. They couldn't take over. They couldn't actually change the demographics that quickly. But by the 1920s and 30s, they had huge influence in radio, the new broadcast media. They controlled two of the leading newspapers of influence in the United States of America, the New York Times under Adolf Hawks, and by the way, supported by the ADL. And also the Washington Post, Eugene Meyer. Yes. And they were warmongering. And this whole controversy about Joe Rogan and the whole controversy about, oh, well, these people are terrible Nazis because they said maybe Churchill was the bad guy in the sense that Churchill was demanding war. The irony about this whole thing is Churchill in 1920 had a big article talking about how communism was a Jewish movement and how Leon Trotsky's vision was a communist world controlling the world run by Jews, that Jews would dominate the world through communism. And why is it that Jewish billionaires such as Jacob Schiff and these other Jews, Wall Street bankers, the epitome of capitalism, how come they were the biggest controllers of communism? Maybe because they knew that when this Jewish elite, which Churchill details to the finest degree in his article, had Russia by the hair of their heads, as that's the way Churchill said it. And Churchill literally says that Trotsky's vision was that. He did say the only notable exception of the leaders of communism was in fact Lenin. And the biographer of Winston Churchill, Martin Gilbert, and all the Jewish publications knew this too, say that actually Churchill was wrong. Lenin was not the exception, you know, that proved the rule of Jewish power. Lenin himself had a very proud Jewish pedigree, identified himself as a Jew. The archives of Russia, I was with Alexander Solzhenitsyn right by my side when he showed me the documents of Lenin's family talking about how Papa Lenin always identified himself as a Jew and our family is Jewish. The language they spoke on a daily basis in their family was not even Russian, it was Yiddish. Lenin. But for some reason, the whole world was not entitled to know that fact and know the truth about that fact. So let's go back to some of this video while we can.
Look, everyone who lives here wants to be proud of the country. I always have been. And I'm proud of its people still. But if your main export is death, you know, that, I mean, what? It doesn't work in the long run. I mean, there is blowback.
What's wrong?
We're engendering a lot of ill will. Look, 10 years ago, even more recently than that, the only way we could get to the space station was on a Russian rocket.
Right.
And we, you know, we had a collaboration with them. We were able to get to space that way. And now we don't. I mean, it's, and the bad thing that's, you know, like in the Middle East, Israel's creating tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people who are going to hate the United States. And you know, they're going to hate Israel also. But because we're giving Israel the weapons to do what they're doing, we're creating a lot of people who hate us in this country.
But we're told that it's essential to our national security to do that. Do you believe that?
No, I don't see that.
It's the opposite.
I mean, one of the reasons, like I said, the Biden letter said, well, we need to keep our industrial base strong, so let's fund all these weapons and send them over. But I don't see how it's strengthening our country. In fact, we're getting weaker by doing it.
So you've been, I think...
Another good commentary. Again, the rest of the story. Osama bin Laden is accused by the government as being involved in this 9/11. That was behind the hijackings and the killing. A lot of people will disagree with parts of that. But the point is, I think there's a lot of evidence that there were hijackers in the plane. They weren't radio-controlled airplanes. Sorry, it just, it doesn't make much sense. But there was also a DEA study which were following the Israeli Mossad, tapping their phones. And there's no way they wouldn't have known about it. In fact, even Fox News, believe it or not, Britt Hume and Fox News actually discovered, and they interviewed FBI agents saying this is impossible. These Jews were monitoring the hijackers, 9/11. And by the way, the 9/11 Commission was controlled by a Jew. Again, these Jews worked their way into these positions, and they redacted 28 pages of the key report of the Commission on 9/11. And those 28 pages showed that the Saudi government and the Saudi royal family was in contact with the hijackers, and CIA agents were in contact with the hijackers. So that makes it kind of an inside deal in a way, doesn't it? For sure, at the least. I mean, it was insane, this whole process. In fact, they allowed Saudis... They didn't even allow any commercial flights out of America, but they allowed Saudis to get on planes and get back to Saudi Arabia away from the prying eyes of any congressional committee that might investigate what was going on. And we did capture Israelis who had ties to the Mossad and Israeli intelligence who were filming the event, and they were cheering the event. They were celebrating. They were dancing Israelis. This is not an urban myth. This is urban reality. We have the testimony of people who witnessed it. And then these people failed all their lie detector tests. And then they're allowed by none other than the guy who became head of our security in this country, Homeland Security, ultimately, that was in fact the same guy that prosecuted me for taxes, in quotes, which is bullshit. Actually, the actual investigation after I'm in the jail proves that I overpaid my taxes. I've got the document. But it's like they wanted to silence my voice. I need to get on Tucker and start talking about some of these things. I was talking about these things that Tucker now talks about years and years and years ago. And we have to talk about these things. Itself, Al-Qaeda, the same Al-Qaeda that we say in Osama bin Laden that was behind 9/11 or was partly behind it, that same Al-Qaeda was financed and created as a massive terrorist force by the United States of America because they knew by the 1980s, they knew that Russia, by the 1970s, they knew it, that Russia was overthrowing the Jewish communists. And once they overthrew the Jewish leaders of communism, they knew that Russia was going to go toward the great Christian faith of Russian Orthodoxy. They knew that they were going to go back to private property. And by the way, the Russian Orthodox Church is a wonderful church. I have family members that are Orthodox, and I'm so thankful that they're involved in that faith. And I think that that denomination of Christianity, it's wonderful. And it's like we have a situation that, you know, we they hate Russia, not because they're communists. The Russians overthrew communism. They dropped the Iron Curtain. They moved their bombs out. It was NATO because the Jews were afraid of the Russians. And then what happened, they thought Putin was going to be their ally. But when Putin got into the presidency, he called a meeting and he said, "You oligarchs, your time is over. If you do any more of this robbery of the Russian people, you're out of here." And we've seen a destruction of most of the Jewish oligarchs in Russia. There's a few left, a handful. But there's 400 now people in the biggest, richest, most powerful people in Russia, and only a handful, I mean, a dozen or so, might be Jewish, even of descent. And most of them toe the line, pretty much. Because that's the difference. That's why they hate Russia. I'm out of time. Please come back to me tomorrow, davidduke.com. And the Rents Radio Network, support our work. Box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana. Maybe you can support us if you be kind enough to do so. And also go to my web at davidduke.com, my gab at Real David Duke, my Odyssey and my classic videos that are available there at Real David Duke on Odyssey. And also you can go to my website. It's a great resource. So I appreciate all of you. And I love you, and I'll see you again tomorrow.